welcome our speaker this evening, Brendan, from A Design for Living in Neptune, New Jersey.
Hey, everybody, I'm Brendan. I'm an alcoholic. It's good to be out here. It's good to be in your company. I got to tell you, when I walked in, I felt right at home. Everybody was like, hey, you must be the speaker. Yeah. How come you didn't dress up? which is always fun. You know, it's always fun to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, before I forget, because I will if I don't, Sarah, thank you for the invitation to do what I think is one of the most, not the most important bit of service here at all. But it's just a real great opportunity for a guy like me to share what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I want to thank the person that put the key in the door tonight and turned the lights on. And I want to thank the person that put the coffee on, that bought the coffee, and made it so hospitable here. And I want to thank all the people that made this their home group and our service here. Because without you, we're not here tonight. We don't have a place to come. And I learned early on that, you know, if I don't have a home to go to, then I'm homeless. So if you're sitting here tonight and you don't have a home group, find a secretary or one of the group members and sign up tonight. You don't have to be homeless anymore. You know, and I got to tell you, if it were me and I was homeless, I would make this my home group just based on what I experienced when I walked through the door as somebody who's never been here before. And that's a pretty neat deal. And there's only a couple of places where this happens. One of them is Alcoholics Anonymous. I haven't found the other one. That's why I'm still here. Because I got to tell you, if I walked into some of the places that I used to walk into and I got the greeting that I got here, I don't know that I would have left there. At least I don't know how I would have made it out there alive. So my home group is a Sunday night Design for Living group. We meet at 7 o'clock on Sunday nights. We are a big book group, big book study. The big book, as I'm referring to it, is the book Alcoholics Anonymous, for anybody that may not know that. Basically, we got somebody that sits down in front of the room, in front of about 250 to sometimes 300 people, and they share their experience as they've experienced it out of this book, by being guided and directed by somebody else who has had an experience with this book and so on and so forth. That's my home group, and I love it. I got a service position there. I'm the chair. It runs till February, and then I got to find a new position. I learned early on in Alcoholics Anonymous that when you show up and you get a group, you get a job. And if one isn't available at the business meeting like you guys had tonight, you know what? I jump in and I ask, where can I be of service? How can I help? Clean up, set up, make coffee, great. Those are the things that make this possible tonight for a guy like me to show up and be here. And those are the things that I learned when I came here. Now, my anniversary date is January 8th, 1993. I've never had a legal drink. So right there, there's a lot of people that might go, well, I'm not going to identify with this guy. And that's okay. Because the first time I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was 16 years old. And I belonged here. But you guys were in my way. You know, all the old people, you guys were in my way. I couldn't see the truth about Alcoholics Anonymous or my disease, alcoholism, because I was so focused on who was here or who wasn't here, that I was the only one. See, I tried to get sober all by myself in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Anybody else try that? Doesn't work out so well. Yeah, it sucks, is really what it does. And I apologize if that offends you, but that's as racy as I get with my language. How did I get to be 16 and an alcoholic, right? My qualification. Real simple. I drank alcohol. And when I drank alcohol, I drank it in a way that I never understood it. I couldn't grasp the idea and the concept of what happened to a guy like me when I drank booze. I just didn't get it. But you know what's funny? Remember how I said when I walked in here I felt at home and I talked about home group a little bit? Well, here's another piece of that. When I was growing up, you guys used to show up at my house on a Friday night once a month with cookies and cake and smoking your cigarettes. And I'd come down the stairs because the babysitter had gone home, and my mother and father walked in the room because my father was upstairs at the Al-Anon meeting and my mother was in here in the AA meeting, you know, and that was almost 40 years ago, or almost 38 years ago. My mother will celebrate this year. So I grew up with you guys in my home. So when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I got to tell you, I had an advantage over what I'd like to say over some, so I thought, because I always like to be ahead of, on top of, have the advantage, better than. I don't like this less than stuff. It doesn't work for me. However, that's how I always felt. But I felt at home. Like I felt like when I came in here, I was like, wow. You know, for that second time around, I came in here at 19, and I really felt at home. Because I knew who and what you guys were. I knew exactly who and what you were and what you were going to do to a guy like me. You were going to love me the way that I needed to be loved, in a way that I didn't know and I didn't understand. And you were going to give me something that I had no idea existed. Because I thought I came here for a drinking problem. You know, I really did. I thought that I just couldn't control my drinking. And you guys were going to give me that education at 90 days. I was going to graduate and all was going to be well. And thank you very much. And I'm sorry for those of you who have to stay longer. You know, it's just, you don't have it as good as me. That's really how I felt. Like, that's what I was thinking. And at 19, it's not hard to believe that that's the way a 19-year-old is thinking, right? We know it all, and, you know, that's it. But what qualifies me to be an alcoholic is, you know, it's like, you know, nights where I stood in the woods with a couple of friends, and we had a four-pack of 30-ounce Coors Light cans, and there was three of us. And we each got one, and there was one left. And I couldn't stop thinking about the one left. Like, I was drinking mine and thinking, how am I going to get that one? Because I'm going to need it. Because I knew. Because any time alcohol entered my system, it was always, where's the next one? Where is it? When's it coming? How am I getting it? And where do I got to go to find it? Because I can't do without it. And I didn't understand that there was something going on inside me that compelled me to seek and go and find and search and do whatever was absolutely necessary to get that next drink. I didn't understand that. I thought I was just a goofy kid, you know, hanging out at parties or going to people's backyards where I knew there was a barbecue and there was these big giant garbage cans that were filled with beer in the beginning of the day. And I know the cold ones are still at the bottom of that big garbage can. And I go bobbing for beers, you know, in people's backyards or, you know, around the neighborhood and fish out these and drink as much as I could. And guys, I'm not a beer drinker. I didn't like it. I really didn't. But it had alcohol in it. So it was okay, you know, and it wasn't until I got to the point where hard liquor became an option or available to me that I started to drink that. But that's the way that I drank. And when I started, I couldn't stop. There was no way for me to stop it. So when I was, I got arrested for the first time at 11. I would get arrested there, you know, off and on over the course of the next few years, up until I was about 16, 17 years old. Sometimes booze was a part of that, but at 16, booze was definitely a part of it. I ended up getting arrested with a district attorney's kid. You know how this ends, right? I got in like the littlest trouble you could possibly get into for a pretty significant crime. I had four counts of B&E. Grand Theft Auto, the same vehicle four times, so they wanted to hit me with four counts of that. I was looking at time, and I had a small file on me in the town that I lived in, and they showed it to me. They were like, here you go. This is all about you. And I'm like, yeah, well, it's not big enough. My mother sat there in the police station while I lied to the cop, the detective, about not doing it. I swear, Mom, it wasn't me. I didn't do it. I swear. You know, and those were my famous words. And I ended up getting community service, and I went to Alcoholics Anonymous for the first time. And when I came in, my uncle was there, my mother was there, my brother was there, and there I was, right here in Alcoholics Anonymous with my family. You know, and I said, "I'm Brendan. I'm an alcoholic." And everybody was just like, "Hi, Brendan." And you know, my uncle was like, and my mom was like, and my brother was just like, "You're not done," you know, and he knew, but it was. I knew where it was that I was supposed to come to. I knew where it was that I needed to be at, and so getting to Alcoholics Anonymous for the first time was kind of easy because I knew where it was and I knew how to get there. The second time wasn't so easy. So 7 months later, it's just about New Year's, Christmas time. I get invited to a party. I hadn't been invited to a party in probably 2 or 3 years, but people heard that I wasn't drinking anymore. And they were like, "Hey, let's invite Brendan to the party." People were like, "Are you sure?" And they're like, "Yeah, he hasn't had any drinks. And, you know, he's doing really good. And, you know what, I think it would be really good for him." So I get the invitation, and I'm like, wow, I'm touched. Like, you know, these are the promises of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? Right? You get your dog back, you get your car back, you get your friends. No, it's a country song backwards. I'm sorry. So what I end up doing is I get invited to this party and I decide to go. And when I go to this party, before I get there, I call a couple of people and I say, hey, whatever you do, don't let me drink. Please keep me from ever touching and drinking and just keep it away. Don't let me near it. And they're like, yeah, absolutely, no problem. Don't worry about it, man. You'll be fine. So I get to the party. I'm hanging out. I'm having a great time. I get up to go to the bathroom, and I'm not going to describe that in detail. However, I am in at the sink, and I've got my hands on the sink, and I'm looking in the mirror, and I'm trying to figure out how it happened. Because I was drunk. I was drunk. And when I say struck drunk, guys, I have no idea how I got drunk. I don't know where I got the drink. I don't know where it came from. I didn't bring it with me, and nobody around me would let me have it. And there I was, drunk. I remember little of what happened, what I did, or what I said. I just remembered the end result. Sitting there going, I'm in so much trouble. Not with my mother or my father. Not with the police. Not with anybody. But this is bad. And that would lead me out for drinking for the next 2.5 to 3 years. I get accepted into a college. I was a binge drinker. I drank on the weekends. Father in Al-Anon, mother in AA. It was kind of hard to, you know, really kind of go to it for me. Especially with such a watchful eye that they had. And I would get to college, and as soon as I knew that they were back in New Jersey, when they called me and I heard the dog bark, that's when I knew they were in New Jersey. And I began to drink, and I began to drink like they were going to run out of it. And I was drinking beer, and then somebody down the hall was at the dorm was just like, hey, look what I found. Like, I lost that. And it was like a gallon jug of vodka. And I was like, you know, where have you been my whole life? And I became a vodka drinker, like, right then. And that was it for me. And I couldn't get enough of it. I would end up getting asked to leave that school. I would end up getting a GPA of a 1.24, which is failing. 1.24. Awesome. I passed philosophy and English with a C. And I passed philosophy because I did non-conference approved material with my professor. He knew that I was involved with, you know. Out of respect for the traditions, I don't talk about a lot of that stuff. But I got to tell you guys, I didn't want to be an alcoholic. So I made a conscious decision to try something else. So I would get together with these group of guys, and we would tape off the door so that none of the smoke left the room, so nobody could detect that we were doing anything. And I did that for about 2.5 weeks, and it felt like 3 months. And I was trying not to be an alcoholic. But what I realized, and later on in talking to a sponsor, was that whatever I did, if I wasn't drinking, I did it alcoholically. I did it like there wasn't going to be enough, and I did it like it was going to run out. And it was a concern. People were worried about me when I did anything. And I remember when I picked up that first drink again, and it was almost like there was tears in my eyes. I was so happy. It felt so good to be reunited with my friend alcohol again. I got to tell you guys, that's not a happy thought. To be reunited with alcohol and be so full of joy because of the relief that it gave me, I knew I was doomed. Yet, I get kicked out of college. They don't invite me back. I realize that I'm doomed. On January 5th, I had my last drunk. I went home and I told my mother and my father, Mom, I'm an alcoholic. And she said, okay, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And she said, okay. And I went downstairs and I told my father. He was reading the newspaper, and I smacked the back of the newspaper after pacing in front of him for what seemed like 3 hours. And he said, what's up? And I said, Dad, I got to tell you something. He said, what's that? I said, I'm an alcoholic. And he says, it's about effing time. And I just didn't get that. Like, and I'm like, and in that moment, I went right to that spot that we like to go to. Why didn't you do anything about it? Why didn't you keep this from happening? I'm your little kid. I'm your little boy. Like, I'm the youngest. I got an older brother. Like, you didn't protect me. You didn't save me. You didn't keep this from happening to me. You go to Al-Anon. You should have been able to stop this. That's what he thought, too. But he knew that he couldn't, and he had the ability to tell me in that moment, only you could have told you that you were an alcoholic. Only you. And it was like Smokey the Bear right there. And I was touched. And I went to a meeting, and it wasn't there, and I didn't dare tell anybody. My mother asked me when she came home, how was the meeting? I said, nobody was there. And she goes, let me see which one it was. And she looked in the meeting book, and sure enough, it was tomorrow. See, I didn't know what day of the week it was. Guys, I can sit here in a suit and tie. I don't wear this stuff every day. This isn't, you know, this is what I was asked to do for Alcoholics Anonymous when I got here, and I haven't stopped doing it. This is just what I was asked to do. Whatever you do is what you do, and please understand that this is what I was taught. This is what I was shown, and this is what works for me, so I do it. But I didn't know what day of the week it was. I hadn't brushed my teeth in a couple of months. I had hair. No wonder it fell out. You know, not very well kept. I mean, I would have made a good homeless person. I really would. You know, greasy, slimy jeans, underwear that hadn't been taken off or just turned inside out, you know, three or four times, you know, thinking it was funny, you know. Like, you know, hey, you know, this is good living good, right? Living good. I'm in college. This is what you do. I was a drunk, guys. I was a drunk. I was a drunk on campus. And, you know, being a drunk on campus doesn't do me or anybody else any good. And I was proof of that when I got here, because I didn't know what day of the week it was. And my mother said to me, in the softest, nicest, gentlest, not motherly way, but in a way that only we here in Alcoholics Anonymous know how to treat the guy that is so right on the edge of dying. So right on the edge of dying that if we say the wrong thing, it might kill him. You know, and it talks in our book about frothy emotional appeal seldom suffices. But I got to tell you, for some of us, when we walk through that door, the last thing we need is a punch in the face. We need a hug. And in that moment, my mother embraced me with something really simple. And she said, that's okay, honey. It's tomorrow. You misread it. Just so gentle. That stands out for me. Because that right there made it possible for me to get up the next morning, to brush my teeth, to wash my hair, to put on a pair of clean clothes, and go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous where I walked in and I felt welcomed and at home immediately. This room was smoky. The coffee was bad. The laughter was loud. And there were smiles and tears. But more importantly, I felt at home. I felt like I had just walked into the safest place in the world and that everything that I had been experiencing up to that moment could stop. And it did, for a brief moment. All the pain, all the misery, all the self-centered, dishonest, and fearful feelings and thoughts and experiences were just gone right in that moment because I was here with you guys. And I didn't care, you know, what you were doing or who you were dating and who you weren't dating and should have been dating. And none of that mattered to me in that moment. It's my favorite moment in Alcoholics Anonymous because after that, all those thoughts came flying in. I started taking people's inventory. I started, you know, judging everybody because I was so insecure and so uncomfortable with myself. And I figured, you know what? This is a good start. And my journey in Alcoholics Anonymous took off. And there I was. Guys, I was in full flight from reality, but I was in full flight. And I was here in Alcoholics Anonymous with you, and you guys were here to, like, just pull me off the ceiling and, like, hey, Brendan, whoa, slow down, pal. It's okay. Just take it easy. Take it easy. And you slapped me with the slogans, and I loved it. I loved it. And the old-timers, you know, the men and women that have been here and seen guys like me come and go and seen guys like me come and die, you know, that still had that same energy and that same effort that they put into the guy that came before me that didn't make it. And told me to just hang on. Just keep coming. It's going to get better. Just you wait. You wait and see. You trust me. You believe me. Do I look like I'd lie to you? And I'm going, no. You look like my grandfather. My grandfather wouldn't lie to me. And I'm serious. Like, these are the thoughts that are going through my head. I'm 19 years old, and I think I know it all. And I'm crispy fried, and I'm unwilling to admit it. You know, I'm wearing tie-dye T-shirts, and, you know, I'm stuck between being a deadhead and a jock. And I feel fried. I'm blotto. And I get a home group and I get a coffee pot. And my job is to fill that coffee pot. Well, do you think I ever filled a coffee pot with anything? No, I didn't. Not until I came here to Alcoholics Anonymous. So that first time that I filled that coffee pot, how do you think that coffee was? Well, I got to tell you, my self-esteem and my self-worth depended on the quality of that coffee. See, that's how I was, and I think that's how a lot of us are when we get here. You know, it's just like I'm measuring myself based on what you think about what I did. You know, how I stacked the cups, how I laid it out. Whatever I did, I was looking for a compliment. I was looking for somebody to tell me, "You're doing great, pal. Oh, nice job. Wow, you're really standing out. You're somebody here." You know, I was looking for that because I didn't know that that wasn't what I'm supposed to be looking for here. And I was afraid to ask you what I was supposed to be looking for here. Now, I heard what you said from up front here, and I read those things on the walls here and here. And, you know, I thought the traditions were pretty neat, but what a bore fest, right? And the steps were pretty simple. I read them, and I did them right here. You know, I sat where you're sitting, and I read those steps, and I was like, got it. Good. Got to go home and I got to apologize to Mom and Dad for being an idiot. Mom, Dad, sorry I was an idiot. My mother and father just looked at me and they were like, okay, you know. And defects of character, so I didn't sleep in anymore, you know. No big deal, right? That's a defect of character, oversleeping. No idea, guys. Because, see, I wasn't getting direction and guidance from another. I was running the show. And so my journey in Alcoholics Anonymous was on my terms. And what I didn't realize is that the longer I did that, the more my hands began to do this. And until they did this, and my knuckles turned white, and I was full of fear, and I was dying in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was 4 years sober. I graduated college. I was given accolades and honors for my success at the college that I had gotten back accepted into that I had been previously kicked out of. I did amazing. I performed unbelievably. And I didn't nearly get the credit that I deserved. Right? Because I'm doing it for all the wrong reasons. You know, I'm not doing it for why I'm supposed to be doing it. I'm doing it because I want the recognition. I want the pat on the back. So I graduate college and I go from being a big fish in a little pond to a little fish in a big pond because I'm here back in New Jersey. I don't have any friends from high school. I had nothing in common with those guys. They were all out drinking and I was an alcoholic. What did they want to do with a guy like me? You know, so I'm back in this area. My parents had moved from where we were to about an hour south and I got to commute back to my old home group and I feel really disconnected and I really don't like a lot of those people up there anyway, and you know, I'm just finding a lot of reasons why I shouldn't or don't need to come here to Alcoholics Anonymous, and it had to do with you people. How dare you? You know, like look at me that way, laugh when you're not supposed to laugh, smoke where you're not supposed to smoke, you know, drinking coffee the wrong way, whatever it was. I looked for every little excuse to put a block between me and you. And what I didn't realize until later on that I was just putting stuff between me and my relationship with God. And when I put stuff between me and God, I put stuff between me and you. And it pushes me further and further out that door until I have no other choice but to take care of this deal on my own. And I don't make good decisions when I get there. But you know what? There was something that happened. There was something that was magical that happened to me. And I can't tell you who and what and how. All I know is that there was a power greater than myself that reached down and grabbed me and slapped me silly. And he said, you better get to a meeting or you're going to die. And you know what I didn't want to do, even though it was the thing I was telling everybody I wanted to do? I didn't want to die. I wanted to know how to live. And I saw you guys doing it here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I couldn't figure out for the life of me what I was doing wrong. I've been here for 4 years, guys. How am I doing this wrong? What am I doing wrong? What am I supposed to do? I've done everything that I think I'm supposed to do the way I think I'm supposed to do it. And I'm nowhere. But I'm here. So I go to a meeting and I put my hand up and I tell everybody I want to die more and I want to live and I want to drink more and I want to stay sober. Will somebody please help me? And there was an old guy in the corner that laughed. Like he knew. He saw something happen that only happens here in Alcoholics Anonymous. He saw the door open. You know, that willingness, that moment where I became willing to accept what it was that you guys were giving me that entire time that I wasn't willing to let in, that door opened up in me because I got desperate and I needed you more than I ever imagined I would. And I welcomed you in. And I told you about me. What I found out is that was the death of self. That's what it was explained to me. That's where I died. And the new me, the spiritual me, began to grow and live. And what would happen is I would get pointed and directed to different men and women here in Alcoholics Anonymous that would guide me on this path. Now, I would love to tell you that I was on that path and I got guided and I stayed true on that path, but that's not my story. What happened to me was I started getting feeling good. I did an inventory. I was in the process of doing an inventory with a guy who had never done an inventory before, and I was like, well, screw it, you know, you're sober, you know, 25 years, I'm sober, like, you know, 5 years, you know, we'll do it this way. You know, like, I'm still running the show, right? I'm still running the show, but I want to do this. Like, I want to get this done because I need to get unburdened. And this guy shows up, and he's, you know, we got a date and time. We're meeting at a diner. I got my 4-step done. He's supposed to have his 4-step done, and we're going to talk about it, and we're going to read it to each other, and, you know, we're going to experience this amazing thing. Well, you can't do a 5th step with somebody that's never done a 4-step because they don't know what to tell you because they weren't told, so they don't know. But they don't know what they don't know. And they don't know that that's what they're supposed to do. So now all of a sudden I realize that I'm moving forward with somebody that doesn't have this experience that I'm looking for. And it's nothing against them. It's nothing against him. He's a good man. He just didn't have that experience that I wanted. So what did I have to do? I had to go find somebody that did. And I started to seek. And when I opened up my eyes and I opened up my heart and I opened up my mind, God put in front of me what it was I needed to see and what it was that I needed to hear and who it was that I needed to meet. And slowly but surely, I started to meet some really amazing, wonderful people. The same amazing, wonderful people that I had met before. But these were people that spoke to me in a way that attracted me because they spoke of a relationship with the God of their understanding. They spoke about spiritual principles. They spoke about recovery in a way that I wasn't used to hearing it. See, when I got sober in 1993, I was told, and I saw a guy walk around with a big book. And what I got told when that guy walked into the meeting with a big book, stay away from him. He's a big book Nazi. Well, that tells me two things. He's a bad dude, and the big book's no good. That's what I heard. That's the craziest thing that anybody could have ever said to a guy like me. You know, the damage that we do uneducated here in Alcoholics Anonymous can sometimes cause death. So I got to ask myself, before I say anything about anything here in Alcoholics Anonymous, I better know what I'm talking about. Because I could kill somebody. I mean, they may not die in a parking lot, but they might die down at the bar or in an alleyway because they heard what it was that I said that caused them to say, yeah, that AA thing doesn't work. You know? And I was faced with that growing up in Alcoholics Anonymous in the early years. Those were some of the things that were going on and being said. So what it did was it closed my mind off to the idea of the big book or the book Alcoholics Anonymous and what was in it. But all of a sudden, I start getting guided and directed to these men and women who have had an experience with the book Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm kind of getting excited. Now, before I get too excited, before I graduated college, there was this gentleman that was sponsoring me, and he had met a real pretty girl here in Alcoholics Anonymous that was married and had a couple of kids. And she was still married, and they ran away together. And she left her kids with her husband. And I got a phone call the night before he left saying, I can't sponsor you anymore. I'm leaving town. And I said, well, are we going to have enough time to talk about this 3rd step and 4th step? And he goes, no, I'm leaving tonight. I was like, well, can I still call you? And he said, I would really rather you didn't. Thanks. Okay, great. So the guys that he was sponsoring, there was two more of them, and Dave and John, we got together and we started to sponsor each other. That idea. It was like the blind leading the blind, leading the deaf. So I grabbed onto this little guy named Ray. And Ray was this little short man from Alabama. And he was in the Navy. And he wore his hat. And the brim of his hat was not bent. I mean, it looked like he just picked it up off the shelf that he bought it from. And this hat, and it just sat right on his head. And it didn't move. It was like a hurricane could come and the hat would still be there. But the thing about Ray was, Ray spoke in a way that sang to me, that hit me right here. And he talked about God, and he talked about love, and he talked about, you know, recovery in a way that I never really heard it before. And it was hard for me to hear it because my mind was so closed off to the idea of what recovery was all about, because I had already made up my mind. I had it all figured out. We come here, we listen to the person speak, we go outside in the parking lot, we criticize them, and we go get coffee and try to hook up. You know, and that's Alcoholics Anonymous at 19, 20 years old, you know, in college. You know, maybe not the greatest, idea, but that's what it was. And so Ray says to me right before I graduate from college, he says, Brendan, I want you to, when you get a chance I want you to come to Akron, Ohio. And when you get there, I'll be there waiting for you. And I go, Akron, what are you talking about? Like, what's out in the Midwest? Like, what am I going to do out there? And he's like, oh, that's where Alcoholics Anonymous was founded. And I'm like, where did they find it? Like, what are you talking about? Like, I just didn't get it. It was like just flying right over my head. He started talking about this guy, you know, Dr. Bob and Bill Wilson. And I'm like, so Bill was sick, so we went to go see a doctor, and the doctor prescribed him, like, I don't know what you're talking about. He was like, oh, no, they met at the gatehouse at the Sieberling Estate, and it was supposed to last 15 minutes, and it lasted 4 hours, and Alcoholics Anonymous was born. And I go, because a guy went to a doctor to get help for what? Like, I'm missing, because he had problems with his ears because the noise in the bar at the Mayflower Hotel was too loud. And he couldn't hear the preacher on the telephone and introduce him to this Henrietta Sieberling and Sister Ignatia and all these amazing people. And I'm going, what are you talking about? Like, this has been, like, okay, Ray, you're old, whatever. Thanks, Ray. Love you. And I left. So, you know, I have that experience, and now I'm starting to embark on this journey called recovery. And I had experienced the fellowship in some of the most amazing ways. And guys, the point of my story, or the first part of that, is that, you know, the fellowship was not going to keep you sober. It'll keep you sober long enough until the steps get you, or until someone here in Alcoholics Anonymous tells a story that you need to hear that gets you up off your whatever it is and moving in the direction of recovery. And all I know is that, you know, the 12 steps, the first 11 of them are the requirement for me to go and help another person. So if you're helping somebody and you haven't done that first 11 steps, I just ask you to please reread what's in this book, the first 164 pages. You know, come to terms with yourself and what's in here and the directions that are in here so that you can best suit yourself to be a service to God and those about you. Because if you don't do that and you're here in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm just afraid what's going to happen to that individual that's on the receiving end of the love that you're giving them, which is great. But there's a message that carries depth and weight, and it's not mine. It's the one that's in this book, and that's what was given to me. And as I started to get directed and guided, I thought, what a great idea. I'm going to Akron, Ohio. And remember when Ray said to me, when I see you there, I'll be there waiting for you. Now, I had no intention of going to Akron, Ohio, but I went. And I get to Akron, Ohio, and it's on a college campus. It's on Akron University. Celebration is usually around June 10th weekend. And if you haven't gone, go. And if you want to buy tickets for it on, I think it's on February 1st, tickets go on sale. The sooner you buy them, the better chance you got of getting in the big arena to see the main show, the speaker, the Saturday night speaker. And it's something else. When I first went to Akron, Ohio, there was about 5,000 people that showed up there. The last time I went there, there was a little over 14,000 people that went there. It has grown by leaps and bounds. And it's the most amazing experience I've ever had, is seeing that many people talking what I'm talking about, living what I'm living, doing what we're doing, together, celebrating it. I got to tell you, it's like nothing I've ever experienced. And then my brother went ahead and went to the international convention. He goes, "You think Founders Day is good?" He cried for like a month, you know? But I get out to Akron, and I'm walking across this college campus, and I'm going to follow in the signs that say registration. And, you know, I'm walking in these, like, these little pathways that are like little garden areas with benches for studying and stuff like that, where people are meditative or whatever. And, you know, I walk past this next pathway, and there's this little man sitting on a park bench with a hat on. And I turn down that path, and I go, "Ray?" He stands up and he goes, "I've been waiting for you." Right in that moment, there was God. God was for me. That's it. That was my experience. That's what it took me to really trust and believe that this was something that was founded in God. Because that man had no idea that I was coming. I didn't call him. And nobody that I spoke to knew who Ray was. He had no idea. But he was there. And he told me he was waiting for me. He'd been waiting a long time. Because I didn't have any plans of going. And on that day, I started crying, and I haven't stopped. See, it's a different kind of crying. It's a cry of relief. It's a cry of joy. It's a cry of release. It's not a cry of pain or hurt or sorrow. It's a celebration. Every time I drive back into Akron, Ohio, and I park my car or truck, as soon as I open the door to that truck, and when my feet hit the ground, tears stream from my eyes because of the gratitude I have for what Akron represents to a drunk like me. Without it, I'm not here. Without those two knuckleheads arguing about 15 minutes and talking for 4 hours, I'm not here. Without a doctor driving, getting into the train, going to a convention in Atlantic City and getting lit up, coming back and disappearing after doing a surgery because he was a proctologist. Proctology. He was a butt doctor, you know. And he has a surgery and his partner gives him a beer to help steady his nerves. And then he doesn't show up. And his buddy and the doctor's wife are thinking, "This guy's gone. He's never coming back." He comes back up the driveway whistling. And they're like, "What in the hell?" And Dr. Bob had gone ahead and he made all these amends. And he was never to drink again. You know, and he was sober till the day he died. You know, that's the kind of stuff that I started to hear about and learn about. And maybe my depiction of it isn't as accurate as some of you might recall it or know it. That's what I understand is the miracle here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's what Akron, Ohio represents to me, is the miracle of my recovery, the miracle of my relationship with the God of my understanding. And as I go back home from that experience, I begin to be overwhelmed with this sense of obligation here in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I begin to understand that I've got a debt that I got to pay back to my fellow man and woman here. That I have to represent something that they don't understand. That when they walk in that inside this room from that door, that they see a guy like me carrying a message, or with my hand out greeting them, or standing by the coffee pot offering them a cup and a cookie, or showing them the literature, or giving them a cigarette, or lighting their cigarette. Or just being a welcome face when I don't want to talk to anybody and they just want to get in their seat because they're crawling out of their skin. I got a responsibility here in Alcoholics Anonymous, and it became clear to me. I started to get to have this experience with the Big Book again, and I started to go through the steps. And I have an experience, and I make my amends, and I start to recognize my defects of character are not things that I can hold on to or keep, that they're God's. When He's ready, He'll remove them. And as He sees fit, He'll have me hold on to Him. But I begin to have this relationship with you here in Alcoholics Anonymous. Men that would come to me and ask me for sponsorship, who I would have the absolute privilege to sit across from and read to them what was read to me and explain to them what was explained to me and to share how it affected me and how I was impacted by what was in this book and how it changed the course and the direction of my life. and how it allows me to stand here before you, a free man. Free. From all the pressures of what I think people think about me, you know. From all the ideas of how I think I'm supposed to be and live. How I'm not better than. I'm shoulder and shoulder in this deal with the men and women here in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know. My story is not much different than anybody in this room. But it's mine. Now, a couple of years ago, I got involved with... I've always been involved in service work. I've always had a coffee pot. I've always had chairs. I've always had ashtrays and brooms and mops. I've always had my hand at the door. I've always had a job in my home group because that's what I was told to do. And I got an opportunity to be a part of, it's coming up here in November, the Jersey Shore Roundup. And a good friend of mine is the one who kind of thought up the idea with a group of people, and I get to help and participate and be a volunteer, and I get to wear a red tag that says greeter. And I'm prouder and proud to wear that tag because I got to be honest with you, it makes me feel like somebody to have a red tag on that says greeter. You know, it's that simple. And I do that job with a smile on my face, and I do it with every bit of conviction that I got. I bring what I can to the table because that's what I was taught here. What can I pack into the stream of life? How can I make this the best possible experience, not for me, but for the person that's receiving me? How can I be gentle, kind, and loving? How can I offer the best in me? Hey, God, you want to help me out with this deal? And there it goes, just like that. So anyway, I'm there and I'm doing my job and this man walks to the door and I open the door and I'm like, hey, Jerry, how are you? Come on in. And he's like, hey, my friend, how are you? God bless you. Good to see you. How are things? And I'm like, they're good. Now, I got to tell you guys, there was 500 people in this auditorium, and they all disappeared in that moment. Kind of weird. Thinking I'm not feeling so good. Maybe I'm coming down with something. Now, I had been struggling with some of the personalities in Alcoholics Anonymous again, because you guys just weren't doing it the way that I wanted you to do it when I wanted you to do it. And, it was particularly with sponsorship because my sponsor was unable to meet with me, and we realized that it was time to part ways and move on. And so I went ahead and I asked somebody else, and we started to go through this path, and I started to realize that, you know, they really didn't have what I wanted, and I really knew a lot more than they thought they knew, and that I started offering more suggestions and direction to them than they were offering to me. And, you know, I kind of felt like the roles got reversed, and that was all my ego, and I didn't know it. And I had to address that and make an amends later on. And then I ask another gentleman to give me a little bit of direction, and he just doesn't show up. And I'm here, you know, I'm here 16, 17 years, and I'm now getting kind of a little disconcerted, a little irritated with Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm thinking, I've been here long enough. Yeah, I've done my time. It's time to move on. God's telling me something. Brendan, you're done here. Excuse me, go do your work somewhere else. See, I can manipulate the God idea real quick. I can make it suit my thoughts and ideas because my mind's constantly working against me. My alcoholism is constantly working against me. And so I talked to a couple of people about it because somehow that happens here, is that I actually start talking to people. And I'm really talking in the terms of gossip. I'm not really talking looking for help. I'm like, so-and-so is blah, 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 blah. And what I get is, hey, Brendan, why don't you ask God for a little guidance and direction in this matter? Now, that was one thing that was pretty constant and active in my life. It was my prayer in my meditation life. And I was like, that's a really great idea. And I gave it a shot. There's this man at my door, and 500 people disappear. It happens two more times. One of the keynote speakers is a gentleman by the name of Mickey from Denver, Colorado, who I've gotten to become friends with, who's just a really neat member of Alcoholics Anonymous and has become a friend of mine. And it's just happened through coincidence and conversations and a connection. That's all, through God. And so I go up to Mickey and I ask Mickey, and you know, we're in this big ballroom and the lights are out and it's dark and people are eating dinner, and I go, Mick, I got to tell you something. And I tell him about the situation, but I don't name any names. And Mickey looks at me and he goes, hey, Brendan, what are you doing standing here? I go, I'm talking to you. And he goes, move your feet. And I go, yeah, move my feet. Move your feet here in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, move them. Keep them going. And I'm just like, okay. And I go, okay, thanks, Mick. I really appreciate it. And I give him a hug, and I start to walk away. And I said to Mickey, you know, I just kind of glanced back, and I said, hey, Mick. And he goes, yeah. And I go, do you make big book covers? And he goes, yeah, why don't you go ask Jerry? And I go, that's exactly where I was going. See, Mickey didn't know that I was going to talk to Jerry and ask Jerry to be my sponsor. But something happened there that was way beyond me. See, I got to be mindful and aware of the evidence of Alcoholics Anonymous, but I got to be mindful and aware of the evidence of God in Alcoholics Anonymous and how He shows up in my life and how I have been protected, guided, and directed ever since I even knew it, ever since you came to my house for coffee and cookies when I was a little kid. God was there telling me, when you end up with these people, it's going to feel like home. And when this man, Jerry, showed up at that door, I felt a love for another person that I had never felt before. And I knew that it was God-inspired and God-directed. And I put my hand in that man's hand, and I asked him for help. And we began to sit down every night, every Tuesday night. And we did that for almost a year. I had another experience with the book Alcoholics Anonymous. But more importantly, I got to have another relationship with a God of my understanding. And that understanding just got a little tweaked and a little bit altered. And I got humbled. And I got put into a place where ego was not what it used to be for me. See, I used to think coming out and speaking to a group of people was all about how great I was. I had no idea what the real reason was. And when I met with a guy like Jerry, he boiled it down real simple. He says, you're going there to do God's work. You better do it well, because you may not get another opportunity. And I'm like, that is just craziness. Like, what do you mean do it well? Like, I'm going to get graded? And he's like, if you're worried about how it's going to come off, you're dead in the water. He said, but if you just let it happen, you're doing God's work. And do it well. And I'm sure you will. And that's how he's always talked to me. Now, Jerry and I have become friends, and I love that man. And I've asked him recently to take me through the traditions, because he does that. And, Jerry would always tell me, I'd come over to his house, and he's got this pit bull named Felony. And Felony's heard more fist steps than most people in this room. And so Felony assumes the position every Tuesday night, right up on the couch next to me with her head on my lap. And she's just the sweetest little pit bull you ever seen. And I'm not a fan of pit bulls, but she's sweet. And I, you know, God's asking me to do something here, and I'm accepting it. And, you know, my perspective gets changed. Just these little things, right? And Jerry would, you know, said to me, he says, you know, I really got to do something about this place. I got all this clutter. I got all this mess. I got to hire a cleaning lady. And he would just keep, you know, every couple of times we would meet, he would say something like that. Well, about a year ago, Jerry's house got cleaned by this thing called Hurricane Sandy. And it took his house. It took everything that he's got. I thought it took him. And I was so afraid that my dear friend was gone because of what he meant to so many people. And when I finally heard his voice on the other end of the phone, I felt this sense of hope and relief like no other, because there was a man who stood before a home that was no longer there, that was emptied out by this wave of water in Staten Island. And he said, it's going to be okay. And something popped into my head. And I went, well, Jerry, you've been talking about cleaning your house up long enough. I guess God heard you. And we started to laugh. We do that here. We see that kind of stuff here. And what Jerry said to me is, he said, Brendan, I didn't need any of that stuff. I was holding on to all this stuff that I never needed, because all I needed was a man like you in my life. And the men and women who've shown up and supported and loved me through this situation and this ordeal. I got to tell you guys, when you see somebody go through something so devastating like that and is walking right there with God, not angry, not resentful, not irritated, but loving and kind, sad, but loving and kind, losing next door neighbors, friends, it was amazing. I get to go with Jerry in a couple of weeks. Jerry and I are going to be hanging out over in Eatontown, New Jersey, at this thing called the Roundup. It's sold out. But I'll tell you, if it's something you're interested in, look it up. Sign up. Come on along. You just might meet that person there that's supposed to save your life. Because I met a guy there that saved my life. Just like I met a guy in Akron, Ohio, who saved my life. Just like I met a guy here in Alcoholics Anonymous that saved my life. Just like that man and those men that I've met here and those women that I've met here have put my hand in God's hand. Now, when I was first sober, and this is the last of it, when I was first sober and here in Alcoholics Anonymous and I went back up to Utica, New York to go to college, I met this really neat old guy named Tom. Not you, Tom. Different Tom. But you're neat. Tom flew planes, and his son flew planes. And Tom's son was one of those crazy guys that went up in a plane and did loop-de-loops and twists and turns and aerobatic, acrobatic kind of maneuvers in the plane. It was pretty neat, pretty courageous stuff. Almost couldn't find the words. He came home, and his father was over at the airfield with him, and his son got in the plane, and he flew up, and he was doing his deal, and the altimeter was off. And he did it too close to the ground and ended up crashing his plane and dying. And Tom watched his son die right there on the airfield, and there was nothing that he could do. He was dead on impact. About a month later, Tom grabs on to me, and he says, "Hey, Brendan, I need your help." And, "Absolutely, Tom, what do you need?" Because Tom was one of those guys that when I first came here to Alcoholics Anonymous up in Utica, New York, when I first got up there, he said to me, "Hey, kid, what's the good word?" I go, "I don't know. What is the good word?" He goes, "So what are you doing?" I go, "I'm in college." He goes, "Good for you. School or trade. What are you going to be when you grow up?" I said, "I have no idea." "School or trade, kid. You're doing the one thing. That's good. And he would just talk like that. And I'd be like, "Okay, Tom, whatever." So Tom tells me what it is that it's going to entail. He's putting hours on this plane that's been restored, and he's a certifier for the FAA. So he certifies reconditioned airplanes or airplanes that have been broken and damaged to certify them to qualify them to fly, and which is kind of a scary deal, too, because there's no guarantee that they're going to once he's in them. And so he goes ahead and he tells me what I need to do, and I do what I need to do, which is get gas when he takes the plane up in the air to certify it. And he comes back down and lands the plane, and we cover it up, and we put gas in his plane, and he says, "Come on, let's go. We're going for a ride in mine." And I said, "Okay, Tom, great." And I'm 6'4", 6'5", depending on what shoes I'm wearing. And I got to bend myself into like a pretzel, and he goes, "Don't break my plane." And I go, "Okay, no problem. I'll try not to." But I was determined to get into this plane, and I get myself into this plane, and we take off. And when we get up in the air, Tom taps me on my shoulder, and he says, "I want you to grab that stick ever so lightly." And he says, "I want you to just lightly, gently move it to the left and then bring it to the center." And he says, "I want you to lightly, gently bring it over to the right and then bring it back to center." And he says, "I want you to pull it back, and I want you to pay attention to some of the gauges. And when you see those numbers come back up that you started at, I want you to level it off and just ease her off. And then I want you to go through that again." Now, Tom didn't know that when I was a little kid, my dream was to fly a plane. And I was struggling here in Alcoholics Anonymous because I was new and I didn't feel like I fit. So I do what Tom told me to do. And we bring it down and we end up landing it. And he says, "You know why I did that, Brendan?" I said, "No, Tom." He says, "Because I wanted you to feel what it is that I feel." And I went, "I get it. I hope that I have done for you what it was that Tom did for me. I hope that I could get you to feel just a little bit of what it is that I feel here in Alcoholics Anonymous. The love that I have for what the 12 steps, a relationship with God and the men and women here have done for me. I take no credit for it. I'm just here looking for a job to keep me sober. I don't know what I'm supposed to do and when I'm supposed to do it, but when the phone rings and I get asked to do something, I make sure I can and then I do. And if I can't, I don't. But this is the gift that's been given to me and that I'm responsible for. And it's a treasure. I want to thank you guys again. Sarah, thank you so much. And have a happy 24th.